Good morning, all. My name is Lee Stone. I've been a member of UUCL since April of 2021, though I began attending maybe 18 months or so prior to that, just before the pandemic shut us all down. I'm rather introverted, though I like to think I'm open to engaging with other people. I'm physically a bit clumsy and not at all athletic. By nature, I'm neither a leader nor a natural follower, observer, or perhaps even outsider better describes my spirit. I've spent time and energy over my life working to rein in and discipline my emotions, rather than merely suppressing them. I give the lead to rationality. I've embraced lifelong learning, initially by natural inclination and increasingly by conscious choice. I seldom have epiphanies. My typical process could better be described as gradual clarification. Early experience showed that my memory was better than that of many of my peers, although at almost age 76 today, that advantage has been slowly dissipating. Fed by that memory, I found my reading skills and therefore my writing and communication skills increased faster than many of my peers as well, giving me a leg up in school. Later in life, I found these skills sometimes pushing me into leadership positions for which I am not best suited. I was born in Binghamton, New York, a small city near the Pennsylvania border, about halfway between New York City and Buffalo. We never lived in the city. I was brought up in a combination of small town and farming countryside. My parents belonged to a strict Baptist church and took me and my younger sisters to Sunday school and church Sunday mornings, evening services Sunday evenings, and when we were old enough, prayer service on Wednesdays. In addition to the prohibitions that everyone everywhere recognizes, don't harm others, don't take what does not belong to you, don't lie to others to gain unfair advantage, etc., our congregation, in addition, recognized a pretty clear list of other don'ts. No alcohol of any description. The church served grape juice rather than wine at communion. No tobacco. No card playing, no dancing, no movies, for example. As I grew to the age of 12 or 13, and we moved to a new community and a different, ferociously independent Baptist church, I discovered that the theology I was being taught wasn't exactly resonating with me. At that age, I was unable to articulate what precisely disturbed me about what I heard and saw, but I found some things literally unbelievable. I know that word is overused nowadays, but I use it here in its original sense. I lost the unquestioning belief of my earliest years that the church came directly from God, and therefore it must be God who kept the church going. I began to see, shall we call them, discrepancies between articulated beliefs and actual behavior. In my upper teens, our church was disrupted by the pastor paying some unwanted attentions to some of the church ladies, being called to account, and eventually fired from his position. That certainly was not according to theological rules. When I went away to Cornell University, first member of my father's family to attend university, I experienced a watershed. My natural tendency toward reason and analysis got a powerful push. Though I joined InterVarsity Fellowship, which was a Christian organization for college students, I really wasn't convinced that I fit in there. In my junior year, I experienced a minor breakdown in my emotional well-being. Even in my confusion at the time, it seemed to me that somehow my issue was tangled with my attitude to the religious beliefs that I had been taught. I soon recovered enough to continue at Cornell, but I found I could not return to being the outwardly good boy who had memorized chunks of the King James Bible. I also joined ROTC at Cornell, but washed out of ROTC summer camp. Not only was I physically unfitted for that life, I had almost no leadership abilities such as the military needs. So I learned more about myself and my limitations at some cost to my self-esteem. Graduating from Cornell in 1969, I had no clue what I wanted to do next. My draft board kindly assisted me with that problem. 3 years in the U.S. Army as an enlisted body, which fit me and my rather timid personality much better than being an officer. That gave me a wealth of experience with a great variety of other people and situations across the world. I saw some of Vietnam, Thailand, Australia, Germany, and a number of other European nations in 3 years of active duty. I remained in Germany, West Germany as it was then, after completing my active duty obligation. And after language training, attended the Ludwig Maximilians Universität München, the University of Munich, for 2 years of study of medieval Central European history. This also gave me the experience of making my way in someone else's culture, where I was not only spiritually, but legally and culturally the outsider. Back in the US, I obtained a position with an intelligence arm of the federal government, with assistance from a man I had grown to know in Munich. My first government assignment nearly ruined my prospective career, a combination of mismatched skills and a vindictive boss. If it had not been for the next level supervisor intervening to find me a different position, I might have been ejected from the government. As it was, I found my feet and eventually worked my way into the information technology field, combining classes and on-the-job training. I became, by turns, an applications programmer, a database administrator, and eventually, ultimately, a cybersecurity technician. My personal life was rather unconventional. I had not married nor acquired a family, but living in Arlington County, Virginia, I got to know two, later three, little girls and their mothers in two separate families. As the girls had no fathers present, I began to look out for them a bit, and over years, our relationship blossomed into a family that we chose to create. We never actually sat down and worked things out. Rather, it just grew. Those girls are adults now, but I care about them as if they were my blood daughters. All during my time in the Army, wandering the world, working for a living, acquiring my unconventional family, I had resolutely ignored any spiritual component to my life, confusing that with my early experiences of organized religion. I was painfully aware by then that those experiences did not fit me or my life outlook. However, I was in the process of fumbling and stumbling toward my personal understanding of the universe and my tiny role in it. I retired from the government in 2004 to earn an MA in history from the University of Essex in Colchester, England. For those keeping score, this was my third exposure to a different educational system. Back in the US and now living in Loudoun County, I was surprised by a change in my relationship to a woman I had known quite well for more than 25 years. No, not one of my daughter's mothers, though I am to this day fast friends with the one of them who has survived. Renee and I were married in 2017 and spent some time in Georgia. She has daughters and grandchildren there. At one point, she suggested that we ought to join a larger family, as it were, a larger support group. Earlier in her life, she had been exposed to Unitarian Universalism, so that was our choice. The UU Metro Atlanta North Congregation in Fulton County, Georgia, I discovered to my surprise, showed me that I had been a sort of closet UU without realizing it. When I returned to Northern Virginia, I looked for a UU congregation here and found UUCL. The covenant of this congregation encapsulates nearly perfectly how I believe everyone should live and act toward one another. And so, here I am.
Thank you, Lee. I just love these for everything that we learn about each other. Sally?
So it seems just like yesterday that I was up here making covenant with you all. That was back in October. So I'm glad to be here and to be able to share my faith journey with you all. It's interesting to me how each one of us comes here with such different experiences, but our paths all converge right here at UUCL. So this is mostly milestones in my spiritual journey. So I grew up in the Catholic tradition, as several of you here, and that taught me the importance of spirituality in my life. I was a graduate of a Catholic education, a Catholic girls' high school, an Ursuline Academy, and there our motto was Serviam, to serve, and that experience taught me service to the community, service to others. Which has become a thread throughout my entire life. I say today my job is to protect the public health of the American people. So that very early tradition has remained with me and remains in this community. I went on then to a Jesuit university. I minored in philosophy and theology. I knew without the example of the three-legged stool that we have a mental part, a mental leg, a spiritual leg, and a physical leg, in order to be truly solid, balanced people. I seem to gravitate in that direction anyway. So minoring in philosophy and theology, I met many young Jesuits, and I was fortunate to make the Jesuit spiritual exercises. This taught me my personal responsibility for my spirituality, that I had a personal relationship with God, not a personal relationship with the church. So this was all well and good, and I continued on in the Catholic tradition. But as we so eloquently put it, there are discrepancies. There are unbelievable things. There are things that we try and ignore and not pay attention to because they challenge the culture that we were raised in, the spiritual culture. So as I continued on, I became a universalist unwittingly, like so many of you. I have been a lifetime gardener. So there was that spiritual connection with the natural world. I read a book in my early 30s called Original Blessing. And that was by an author, Matthew Fox, where he talked about the fact that babies are not born with original sin. They are born as a blessing to the family and to the community. And this was revelatory to a Catholic. And I followed my husband around the house reading the book out loud to him, saying, listen to this one, listen to this part. And because it was so exciting to me. Matthew Fox was a Jesuit, to hear someone articulate so clearly what I knew in my heart had to be true. And so through this exposure to Matthew Fox, I discovered the fourth century mystics. And many of you may know Meister Eckhart and Hildegard de Bingen. And I just totally resonated with that more Buddhist, more universal spirit, philosophy, spirituality. And through that experience, I became a universalist. I understood this or felt the spiritual connection of all living things. And so that was an extremely important part of my life. So as many of you have experienced, I was a universalist before I knew what the term meant. And then as time went on, there are other milestones in my life. I went to a women's spirituality day where they, in the late 90s, were talking about how to solidify the role of women in ministry. Reverend Ellis may remember when those things were new and novel. And so I went to this to hear about women's role, and it was a Presbyterian woman minister who was speaking to us. And at the end, I went up to her and I said, so I'm Catholic, what do I do? And she looked at me and she said, oh, honey, there's no hope. It's in your dogma. And again, I recognized the truth of that. I needed to hear it somewhere. And that started my journey away from Catholicism with no looking back. The next thing I did was read another book. This one was called Resurrection, Myth and Theology. And it was written by an Episcopalian minister who wrote it for his two daughters who were struggling in a patriarchal religious structure. But what I learned from that book was the Jewish tradition of Midrash, where it's not the biblical story, it's not the details that matter. The story is written to convey a universal truth. And the universal truth is what matters. And whether it's the Bible or the Quran or Buddhist teachings, they're all designed to say, my God is great, my God is better than your God, and all of those human things that we do around God. But what was important to me was, now I was relieved of all the necessity to try and believe the details, the biblical details of the stories, because now I could concentrate on the eternal truths. And my favorite part of the Bible has always been only one section, and that's the Beatitudes. So this was all coming together for me, that universality of spirit, the need for a personal relationship with the God. This also, with the Midrash tradition, relieved me of trying to believe in the Father, the Son, and the Holy Ghost, because there are things that don't make sense. I will never believe Immaculate Conception happened. We all know better, right? We do. So this is the point at which I no longer needed to believe in the Trinity, to have a faith relationship, to have a relationship with God. And then that is when I became a Unitarian, because God became one entity, a universal spirit, and I didn't have to divide him up into different kinds of God. So at this point in my life, I was now a Unitarian, even though I didn't know that either, but drifted away and had no, I wanted nothing to do with an organized religion. I wanted nothing to do with a church. And periodically, my husband and I would drop back in after 4 or 5 years and I'd go, yep, nope, nothing's changed. I'm still where I need to be. So then I had a neighbor who told me I should get to know Reverend Alice. And when quarantine happened and my husband had died very suddenly, I thought, this is as good a time as any. So I started listening in to your services on Zoom. And I wasn't ready to make any kind of commitment or to do anything more than listen in. So I'd prop my iPad up in the garage and I'd clean the garage and I would listen. And you would sing and you would talk, and then I would find myself, I would stop, and then I would be listening. And then at dinner that night, I'd be going to my children and I'd go, I found my social justice group. I found the people who think just like me and believe like I do. And I did that for 2 years. I have trust issues. It takes me a long time, so don't be offended. But this was important to me. And slowly over time, we came back together last May, and I started coming here. And then realized that you were a group that I could continue my faith journey with, that we held the same values. So for the first time in my life, I didn't have to organize myself to fit a round peg into a square hole. We all fit just like puzzle pieces, and it didn't have to be any special shape. And so that was the reason that I joined this community, to share the next steps in my faith journey. So when I came, and I don't know what that means yet, so I'm still working it out. But when we had, remember the service where we all made the little paper boats? And then we poured the water and the jars were all labeled something different. And Reverend Alice said, you know, pour from the jar that represents what you think you are bringing to this community. And with the typical wisdom that I've come to appreciate here, there was a jar with no label, because you might not know what you bring. I poured from that jug. I have no idea where I'll land with you all, but I'm glad to be here. And this is the spiritual journey that brought me here. I was a Universalist and a Unitarian before I knew to call myself that. So I remain grateful that I found you all and I am here. And I can't wait to see what book I read next. Thank you.
Thank you, Sally. I see some common themes emerging.
Yes.
Louis.
Well, thank you so much. And thank you for giving us this opportunity, for Alan, for setting this up. It's amazing to hear the stories from Lee and Sally and just be able to share this with you all. Well, a journey is most commonly referred to or regarded as an act of traveling from one place to another. So I'm happy to have my journey lead me here in Covenant and with a community here at UUCL. But like many of you, to understand how I came to be talking with you today, maybe it's my nature as a history major, but we should understand the family history because it's so determinative of much of our earlier lives and the context for our later lives. So my mom and dad grew up in the Deep South in the 1940s and 50s as Baptists. My dad's family wanted to stay away from the Catholic Church because it dominated much of Southern and Central Louisiana, and partly because of their desire to be less Cajun, which was connected with French cultural heritage in the Catholic Church, and a perception of those days of being Cajun being less desirable of a tradition. My grandfather on my mother's side was a Southern Baptist preacher from the 1930s to the 1990s, starting in coastal Texas and ending up in central Louisiana. His progressive views on desegregation often put him at odds with the Klan from the stories I heard growing up. But they finally settled in Cotton Point, Louisiana, where he became pastor at First Baptist Church. At that time, in that part of central Louisiana, the Catholics were way more numerous than the Baptists, than the small Baptist community in Cotton Port. But that didn't stop Reverend Klepper, my grandfather. He loved everyone in that town and became very close with the community, regularly attending and even assisting in the Catholic service. He was that close and ecumenical. He had a curiosity. And I can remember vividly listening to my grandfather preach at the small Baptist church in Cotton Port and playing in the parsonage. Those were the core memories of faith and tradition for me growing up. However, my mom and dad's journey didn't end with the Baptist church. Mom and dad moved to Tennessee in the 1960s for graduate school and work and eventually settled in Knoxville in the early 1970s when my dad became a history professor at the University of Tennessee and my mom worked as a physical therapist. My oldest brother, Pierre, was born in 1974. My middle brother, Andre, was born in 1976, and I was born in 1978. And yes, we all had French names, very French names, and being raised in East Tennessee, it was not considered normal to have a French name. So it was Louis Bergeron, Bergeroni, Bergerson, Bergeron. We heard it all. But I think my parents wanted to have some of that Cajun connection, that Louisiana connection to our past. All three of us boys were baptized together on the same day at the Episcopal Church called the Church of Ascension in 1980. Now, being two, the rest of my childhood was spent in that wonderful church and community. I never doubted anything. My faith seemed as fixed as the North Star. I assumed it had always been that way. And only later in life did I start appreciating that my mom and dad must have endured their own journey from Baptist to Episcopal. When they entered adulthood and moved out of Louisiana for school, both of them founded the dogma, as Lee excellently described, no dancing, no alcohol, no nothing, no, as too restrictive and constrictive, especially in the 1960s as people were experimenting and becoming more aware. They experimented with different churches in the 1960s in Nashville and the 1970s in Knoxville, finally finding their home at the Episcopal Church. And I was a beneficiary of their journal and struggle to find a faith home and community. And I can imagine their longing to find a faith home and being able to raise three boys in after trying for so many decades, really, to find that. So I settled into a very positive life and relationship with the Episcopal Church growing up. Knoxville, because of the University of Tennessee and TVA, the National Labs in Oak Ridge, had a bit more cosmopolitan feel than likely some other mid-sized southern cities in the 1980s and 90s. I had Sikh friends, Jewish friends, Pentecostal friends, Methodist friends, Episcopal friends, and even Unitarian friends growing up, all of whom I still see yearly and keep in touch with almost daily by text. But my Episcopal church friends were some of my best friends growing up, which was so important to my youth. And my church was a huge part of my identity. The Bergeron boys and the church were inextricably connected in my mind, in the community. We were there every Sunday and every Wednesday, as was so many of my friends. We grew up together in that church, and that's where my parents' ashes are interred today in the columbarium. So I'll forever be connected with that church. That's how much the home meant to them. But my religious dogma was fairly liberal back in those days. I read books like The Celestine Prophecy. I believed in that spiritual connection to a greater thing. I believed in evolution. I couldn't imagine people like Gandhi in hell because he wasn't a Christian. He almost often said he would be a Christian if he ever met one. I don't know if that's apocryphal or not, but it's a really great, great saying if it is. But I maintained a fairly idealized view of Jesus and Christianity. I said the Nicene Creed and I meant it. I love the traditions of the high church and the service with incense burning, the whole nine, the pomp, the circumstance, loved it all. Praying every night, having guilt, as you often do as a child growing up in the Episcopal tradition. I love the Jesus of the Beatitudes. I believe that was the actual Jesus, and everything else was kind of fluff. I love my King James Bible, though. I love the red lettering where it denoted Jesus's sayings, the words of Jesus. My cup runneth over. Being in East Tennessee, I did have to connive with a lot of very evangelical Christians, so-called. But we had created a nice little bubble of quasi or actual liberalness in that very evangelical world. And when I entered college in central Kentucky, I got exposed to Louisville and Cincinnati Catholics, which are their own breed of Catholics, if you know anything about Louisville, where I known very few Catholics growing up. But most importantly, in college, I took a class called Early Christian History and Thought that sowed the most amount of doubt in my mind that I had ever had. Learning about the Gospels being written 30 to 40 years after Jesus' death, the Quella source of the three Gospels, the Gnostic Gospels, like the Gospel of Thomas, and just the whole concept of our God being the imperfect God and the other God being eons. It's fascinating stuff. The just the beautiful and chaotic 300 to 500 year struggle to understand the life and the death of Jesus in the early church. I was floored. I had believed all my life that Matthew, Mark, Luke, and John had simply put pen to paper and wrote down the Gospels. But my faith ferment was cracked, and the questions that maybe I'd always had could flow unimpeded. After college, I joined the Navy in 2000, attending officer candidate school after graduation. And the Navy introduced me to even more diverse, as Lee has mentioned, a group of people, but also some ideological, strict group of people, very conservative in some ways, very diverse in others. I kept going to Episcopal churches. On my dog tags at OCS, I had them engrave Episcopal so that if a chaplain were called to my bedside or in injured in death and battle, I would have that service to be called on. But somehow sitting in the pews and trying to find community as a single Navy guy with no kids just didn't work for me in Norfolk, Corpus Christi, and San Diego. Plus, I was a single Navy guy with no kids. So maybe I didn't get to church as often as I like to think. But during this time, my mom went to seminary at the University of the South at Suwannee after being a deacon for several years to become an ordained Episcopal minister or priest in 2004. She had spent so many years as a healer, as a physical therapist, specializing in meditation and healing. But she found that spiritual healing was the key concept to recovery. As Sally Eloquent said, the three parts of the stool, the physical, the mental, and the spiritual. The bishop put her to work at the Cathedral of St. John's in downtown Knoxville, where she was a natural. Coming to it as a second career after all of her boys were out of the house and successful, and dad was retired and writing additional history books, she connected with people in a very magical way. She pushed the fairly conservative wingtip-shoed cathedral crowd to having a weekly healing service. She even convinced them to commission the construction of a labyrinth in the central courtyard of the church after she had seen the power of reflection of walking a labyrinth in a monastery she spent a week at. She was the embodiment of what Christianity professed to put out in the world. Huh. Also during this time, I no longer became single, which is great. I dated for many years. My wife, who had actually been jaded by organized religion as a child. She didn't come from a religious household, but she was homeschooled in Virginia Beach. And that meant she dealt with a lot of extremely conservative Christians and the hypocrisy that sometimes comes along with that. She couldn't get my continued draw to the church. And by that time, I had started to believe that I tried to rationalize it. If you saw Christianity as the forest, the mesh of love, the beatitude Jesus, I could still rationalize it in my mind. But I largely stopped believing, as a matter of faith, some of the articles of the Nicene Creed, and saw Jesus more as a powerful philosopher and guide who had connected into the universal sound or universal spirit. But I kept trying to grasp on to my idealized upbringing in the Episcopal Church in Knoxville. But knowing in the back of my mind that to me as a kid, it was purely magical. But to the adults, there was a lot of church politics and the reality that came along with it. That came home to me in the struggle of the Episcopal Church with ordaining homosexual ministers and bishops in the 1900s. It split the church. Friends that we had known for decades completely went away from the church and organized their own church in the and left the Episcopal Church. It really shook me as well. So when Sarah and I, my wife, moved to Alexandria, Virginia in 2007 from San Diego, where I was left active service in the Navy. And in Alexandria, I still sought out an Episcopal church, maybe out of guilt or wanting to be a good son and want to keep that connection with my family. But going alone kept putting more distance between me of where I started my journey and where I was headed spiritually. And then July 27th, 2008 happened. a gunman entered the Unitarian Church in Knoxville, Tennessee, killing two innocent people. Lifelong friends were there that day and witnessed the senseless violence. Actually, one of my dad's history department colleagues from the University of Tennessee, Dr. John Bosted, helped restrain the evil gunman. And it's crazy that a tragedy like that brought UU back to my attention after so many years. I knew Unitarians, but I remember just the tropes of, well, they don't know what they believe. And at that point in my life, I said, okay, tell me more about that. Because I don't. It actually sounds where I'm at life. I knew I didn't have the answers, and that was okay. I knew that I needed to explore spirituality and faith with a community of people who were also searching and journeying, but also loving, caring, and fun. After searching, I found All Souls Church in DC. I loved it. We were married in 2009 at the Courtyard of All Souls by Reverend Lynn Legood, just her, me, and my wife, Sarah. I attended there as much as I could, and we tried to as well. But in January 2010, Sarah and I bought a fixer-upper foreclosed farm property on Gleesville Road. So we'd have land enough to eventually turn it into a working farm and connect more to gardening and nature. We closed on it during the snowpocalypse, if you remember that, in 2010. And we couldn't get to the house for a week, but we gutted everything inside and finally moved in the summer of 2010. I couldn't believe my luck of finding UCL on Gleesville Road. However, I stayed committed to All Souls for the next year or so. And then in 2001, I was recalled to active duty and mobilized to serve at a military base in Africa for over 15 months. It was 2 years of constant travel, training, struggle, but also revelations. And when they asked me, when I got back from active duty, what I wanted on my new dog tags, I said Universalist, Unitarian Universalist. And so here it is. I made that transition. Before shipping off to Africa, my mom and dad visited here on Gleedsville. I finally broke it to them that I was a Unitarian now. And it was a beautiful spring Sunday. We came down to UCL for magical service. I think they saw what I saw, and they were happy that I found a faith community. Even there, I said to them, listen, you guys started as Baptists and became progressive Episcopalians. Stands to reason I can go from Episcopalian to Unitarian. And they couldn't argue the point. With that Africa deployment behind me in 2014, I let my membership at All Souls lapse. But I never got to committing to UUCL, as we were still doing home and farm project after project after project, a seemingly unending stream of projects on the farm. And then in 2017, we had Wyatt. And that came with some medical complications that further kept us from committing here. And things kept coming up, and I think I made a lot of excuses on my own mind. I was back in uniform at the Pentagon and with a demanding schedule. And Wyatt and I would attend some holiday service, but I couldn't fully commit. And then my mom and dad's health both went downhill fast with Alzheimer's. My mom passed in the summer of 2019, and then my dad in the summer of 2020. Those are both really tough on me. But their passing and my raising of an own child, especially in my 30s and early 40s, gave me such a perspective that I hadn't considered before. And this year, we finally made it official here in October in a very flexible and beautiful way. It took me a long time to get here with fits and starts, but UCL never gave up on me. You always had my name tag in the back since 2018, even though I had done nothing to earn it. You welcomed me. You embraced us, and I couldn't be happier. I love that many of you are seekers. I don't have all the answers on the nature of the divine and in the meaning of it all, but that's okay. We don't have to have the answers, but I think it's important to never stop seeking them. We want to bring Wyatt up in a community that helps him mature in his spiritual upbringing to approach these fundamental questions of life with curiosity, context, and conviction. I want the same. Thank you so much.